I'm getting teary-eyed already. Hi, my name is Louie, and I am an extremely, extremely grateful member of Al-Anon. And even more grateful to be here. I know you guys can hear me, huh? Wow. I'm excited. I'm thrilled. I'm honored. I'm humbled. I want to thank you ahead of time for listening to me. This is the 75th roundup I heard, and that's quite an honor to me to be asked to come here. It's one of those commemorative years, although every year is a commemorative year and every day in Al-Anon for me when I work the program. But I am very flattered to be here. This is my first time to talk in front of a group at a roundup type thing like this, so bear with me if I get into those little memory lapses and I start rambling and doing all these other neat things. I had told Steve, which before I forget, I'd like to introduce my husband, and that's Steve right over here, a very, very wonderful husband that I have. He's my big kahuna. I call him my big kahuna. I wouldn't share that with everybody, only amongst friends that I know I love and you love me and you'll accept me for what I am. He's going to kill me later. Sherry, I know you know what this is like. But anyway, I told Steve that I wanted to start off with a joke, and I'm so bad at telling jokes, but I love humor, and he's laughing. And humor is one of the greatest gifts, I think, that I found in this program, and I have to have it in my life every day, otherwise I just don't work well. And with the Al-Ateens, I'm so lucky and fortunate to be an Al-Ateen sponsor for the last 12 years now. I got roped into that real quick. But I love it. I love it. You know, God put me there. Anyway, and I called one of the kids because there's one of the boys, and he's 16 years old, and he is also in the AA. He goes to those meetings too. Just a wonderful kid. We go around talking. I take him places and things like that. The neatest kid. But he tells the best jokes. I said, Jason, I need a joke, big time, in a hurry. I need a good, simple, easy joke. And so he said, he goes, why don't you tell this one, Louie? And I said, okay. He said, there's three people. I got to remember I'm in a chapel. There's three people that pass away, and they don't make it. They go straight downstairs to all the fire and you know where. And the one man is a rabbi, and he meets the devil down there, and the devil says to him, he says, so now tell me, why are you here? And he said, well, he said, devil, he said, you know, I fell in love with pork, and I just couldn't stand it, and I ate it one time, and I ate it every night after that. And the devil said, well, welcome. So then the devil turns around and says, he says to the priest, he says, so now tell me, now why are you here? And the priest says, well, I fell away with that chastity thing and found out what it was like, and, you know, it just happened every single night. And he said, so all I can say is that I just couldn't quit. And the devil says, well, welcome, glad to have you here. So then he looks at this lady and he says, she's a little Al-Anon lady, and he looks at her and he says, so honey, now tell me, why are you here? And she says, you know what? It ain't hot and I ain't here. Thank you. That was hard. That's denial, right? That's the one joke I could remember. Yeah. Thank you, God. Boy, is that so true. You know, and if I may, please, I'd like to read today's reading, because this is my little Bible for me, my little cup of serenity in the morning. And this is exactly what I needed to hear this morning when I read ahead yesterday. I like to do that. But it says, Al-Anon, like AA, is founded on spiritual basis, on acknowledging our dependence on a power greater than ourselves. The thousands of Al-Anon groups around the world have members of many faiths. Our fellowship does not follow any single religious discipline. We simply accept the idea that there is a power which is more important than man's own individuality. We believe we cannot thrive without reliance on a higher power, and that we must follow the ethical standards of behavior, basic in every spiritual philosophy. We can find peace of mind and a real fulfillment only through devotion to something above and beyond ours. Today's reminder: understanding my relationship to God will show me that humility is an essential element of faith, and true humility will remind me to live and let live. Faith in a higher power can also help me overcome my faults. If I believe in a power greater than my own, it would be unreasonable for me to behave as though I were all wise. I pray for guidance from my higher power in everything I do. I know that many of my decisions could have been more wisely made if I had been more receptive to his guidance. Wow. Boy, did I need that for this talk this morning, huh? I got all my neat little notes, and they're all just going to fall off the podium up here, and I know I'm not going to follow any of them. But first of all, I'd like to say how, after coming into Al-Anon, I truly do believe this. I think that we're all miracles. We're all walking, living miracles in here. And because of my higher power, that's why I am here. He's the one who got my footsteps here. He's the one who's carried me these last 13 years and showed me the way to get into Al-Anon and how to work it. And through your love and the fellowship, I'm able to be up here today, because believe me, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Al-Anon. And the higher power of my understanding, I choose to call God, and I'll probably refer to him quite often through the talk, but that's because he's the reason I'm here today, and I believe that. And Al-Anon and my higher power are the reason that I'm happy, joyous, and free today, one day at a time. I have heard it said, and I really like this. I've heard it said, and it's on June 19th of our ODAT, and it says that God asks no man that he accept life. That's not our choice. What is our choice is how we accept life. And the other one I heard is that our life is a gift from God, and what we do with our life is our gift to God. Yeah, I see people shaking their heads. That's neat, isn't it? And I try to remember that many, many times, especially if I'm feeling down or I know I got to get over to a meeting and something's not going right, and I just have to remember, you know, my life is my gift to God. You know, these are my choices, and these are my new choices, what I want to do. Before I came to Al-Anon, I remember I was thinking about all this. And it's nothing like reflecting back to make you grateful, right? And nothing like doing a newcomer meeting or working with a newcomer to make you grateful and or to remind you how grateful that you are. But I was thinking about the days when I first came in, and I remembered all those old survival tools that I had, all those ways that I used to get through life. And I was thinking about them, and I don't want to do all those old things that I used to do. You know, I used to operate off of anger, and I used to argue all the time, and I used to work with trying to control things, and then when I couldn't control it, I'd go absolutely crazy and nuts, you know, and I'd get totally out of control. Right, I have some stories on that. And then, you know, I had all those symptoms of denial, and I was depressed. I had all those expectations. You know, I kept thinking, oh, you know, this wasn't going to keep on happening. And I kept believing all those empty promises, my empty promises that I had, that I wasn't going to do it again. You know, I wasn't going to scream and holler and, you know, anyway. I had all these expectations and was going to all those empty wells all the time. Absolutely went to all the empty wells, if I even went to a well. You know, I didn't know how to get to one of those at that time. I had fear, big time fear. I still work with fear. I still work with that on a daily basis, but now I have the tools, I know how to do it. But you know, back then it was forgetting everything and running, you know, just running and running, jumping out of things. I jumped out of boats, I jumped out of all kinds of things. That's later. Steve can tell you that too. Just run, jump. And you know, but now I know that I don't have to do those things anymore. I had all this guilt, wearing all this guilt on my shoulders, you know. Oh, gosh, it's so bad. I really need to get out of this relationship, and I don't know how to get out of it. And, you know, the hopelessness and the very low self-esteem. You know, I know the reason now why I defended myself and fought all the time was because that low self-esteem. I just kept trying to, you know, build it all back up again, and was doing it so much the wrong way, didn't know how to do it. And the manipulation, you know, well, if you don't do this again, I won't do that again. You know, and my manipulation with my higher power. Oh, my gosh. I remember driving home many nights and saying, I'll never do this again. If you let this happen, I swear, I won't go out and look for him again. I swear, you know. The obsession, big-time obsession. Always wanting to know, where he was and what he was doing and what was happening. And trying to figure out how to find out what was going on. And then there was perfectionism, and I think that perfectionism thing was because I nothing ever did go right. And I so desperately wanted things to go right, and it never did go right. You know, so I was always working with this perfectionism thing and the fear of not being perfect. And then, the resentments, all those resentments. Wow. I can't get over all the resentments that I had. Work with those on a daily basis. But, you know, we're so lucky to have this program to know how to get through all these things now. You know, in that roller coaster, up and on. I see some people smiling on that one. Boy, that roller coaster going back and forth. I don't like that roller coaster anymore. I don't like all that kind of rotten excitement. That's what I call it. I don't like all that stuff. And, you know, then there was the sarcasm, that jab, 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 and boy, you know, the definition of that, they say, is that ripping, tearing flesh, sarcasm. And I don't like to do that anymore. Just don't like to do it. And just take that knife and just twist it a little more, you know. A little more criticism, and boy, am I right, and do I know what I'm talking about. And I'm the one who remembers what happened. You don't know what happened. And I got it on my tape recorder. Wait till you hear this. I got it on tape from last night, you know. I'm serious. and that's the part I'm working into that, guys. talking about that, you know. To elaborate on some of all those awful things that I used to do, which I did do, you know, the anger and the arguing. I remember growing up, my mother and father fought all the time, constantly fought. And we would go run outside when they would start that fight. And we'd sit out on the porch, you know, and do anything and everything we could do not to listen to it. And I hated that fighting. You know, and then I love my mom desperately. I love her just terribly. She's one of my very, very best friend. But, you know, the shoes would come flying across the room, and the brushes, anything she could get her hands on came flying across the room. And I remember at 4:30 in the morning, you know, that milk bottle, boy, that glass milk bottle going down on that table, bam, you know, and she's mad at Pop, right? And all the screaming and hollering, you know, and I know now where that all came from. And boy, did I grow up just like her. And I didn't want to be like that at all, you know. I didn't. And I primarily did it, of course, in my close relationship, right? I didn't go around screaming and hollering at everybody. You know, it was just Steve. And and I did a lot of it, all that arguing. And, you know, I remember then we started having things come flying across the room, like, you know, ashtrays. And then there'd be a radio come across the room, a big hole in the wall, you know, and he'd come along 3-4 days later and patch it up. You know, and this is both of us throwing these things now, getting into all this violence and stuff. And then we had the bathroom door that got kicked in, you know, when the door frame went down. And I'm in the, yeah, we're laughing now. I'm in the shower hiding, you know, and of course I didn't provoke this. Of course not, right? Sure. and it was that tissue paper door anyway. We got a lot of excuses for this, but that door just went flying in along with the door frame. And then, you know, just the stuff. And there was only one way in that apartment and one way out. I'll never forget it. I call it Nightmare on Fifth Street. It was on Fifth Street, and it was downtown St. Charles in St. Louis, Missouri. And we go by there every once in a while. It's nice to go by there. We drive by there. It's still standing. And I can just... and I can only imagine all the other stories to come after that apartment, you know, the other people that are living in there. But, you know, we got into all that violence and stuff. And, you know, there were times that I would kick him while he was driving. I'd be so mad. And I still hate that car thing. You know, I would get so angry and so out of control. And always because I was constantly defending myself. And I had such a low self-worth. So bad at that. And I just hauled off and kicked him in that car while he was driving and shocked the holy mackerel out of him. I know I did. I never forget. Do you remember that, honey? Do you remember me doing that? He remembers now, right? I think he remembers that he's not saying anything. And, you know, and then the times I said, stop the car, I'm getting out. Stop the car, I'm getting out. I'm not going anywhere with you again. And then, see, it evolved that I had a regular job, and then I had this nighttime job, and I was a drummer in a band. Okay. Now, is this the opportune setting or what? And guess who would come and see me all the time? And I remember later, as years went on, the counselor said, you know, we had this counselor we went to, and she said, does Louie come to your job so you don't have to go to her job? Right? Well, I don't think so. But, so I was a drummer in a band, and boy, Steve would come, and I would love for him to come, but just have a good old time, and, you know, crazy things really started happening then. One night, I remember, we had this argument on the way home. I think he was the waitress was jumping in his arms, you know. But he's standing by my equipment, by my drums, and he falls over with her in his lap, and they're falling and knocking all my stuff all over. I don't need to tell you, I'm really mad. And so we're driving home, and one thing leads to another, I don't know, and he pours this beer on me, so I got furious with this guy, and I knocked him out. You know, I said, get out. I'm pushing and kicking, getting him out of the car. And then I drive about 4 or 5 more miles, and I'm crying and crying over on the side of the highway, and a cop pulls up, right? And it's this old friend of mine who's now a policeman. He said, Louie, oh, my God, mascara's everywhere, you know? And he says, what's happening? And I said, my fiance's drunk and he's walking home, and I'm telling you know, and I just mortified, totally. You know, this is the beginning of the end. I'm just about having enough of it now, right? So when I go on home and he's calling, there's just a little bit of Al-Anon in me. My mom, I always swear to my mom, I say, you got that little bit of Al-Anon in you, Mom. I didn't answer that phone. There was no way I was going to get that man. No way. He could have been buried in mud, and I would not go get that guy. You know, I just had enough of it. So but you know, along with all this stuff that's happening is this emotional drain. You know, you're starting to get bankrupt on all this stuff. You have no, you're spiritually, emotionally bankrupt, just big time. And I remember my sister came over to my house one Saturday and had told me she saw him out with another woman. Yeah, okay. So I go, this is the clincher. This is what's going to do it. You know, the infidelity issue. Now, she didn't say he was doing anything as far as like, you know, they were hanging all over each other, but they were still in the bar. And the thought of infidelity, that just crushed me. All this other stuff is going on. You know, you got all those rotten survival tools that you're doing. I call them rotten now, but at the time, they kept me alive, and they kept me going back to work, and I know everybody knew, and I didn't want to tell anybody. I was telling all these white lies and, you know, hiding it all. And so she told me that on a Saturday, and I used to go to Sunday 5 o'clock Mass, and it was on a January, and it was cold, and I went to that 5 o'clock Mass that very following Sunday, and I went up there, and I went inside, and as I was walking down the hall, I remember all the columns started coming in on me, all the people started coming in, I started getting these hot flashes and sweaty and faint and getting ready to pass out, right? I said, oh my God, what is the matter with me? There is something really the matter with me, and I just didn't know what it was. I couldn't stand it anymore, so I got outside, and I said, well, you know, I'll go see my sister. She's a nurse. She'll tell me what's the matter with me. She'll fix me. She'll get me back together, right? So I collect myself and get myself together. I had to get out of church, though. I had to get out of there. And now I know that you know, I could no longer even face the God of my understanding. I knew it was that bad, and I had that much guilt. And I knew I loved this man. He was a great guy. Everybody loved him. And I couldn't understand why he couldn't be like that with me. Could not understand it. And I knew he loved me. You know, there was that attraction in the beginning. But and I knew I loved him. Knew I didn't want to marry him, though, right away. But anyway, so I went over there, and she wasn't home. And I wasn't going to go to my mom and dad's, you know, and I have older parents. I wasn't going to go over there. I have a twin brother, and wasn't going to go over there because he would kill him. Wasn't going to go talk about what was going on. And so I just didn't. I went back home, and we had another really big argument that night. And I remember I stayed under the covers, and the next day I stayed under the covers, and I had this little girlfriend, this little Irish girlfriend, Kathy Mack, who I love very much, and she's a very, very good friend of mine, and has always been like a sponsor to me and helped sponsor me through all this part of it. And we used to talk about all these atrocities, and she was engaged to a very good friend of Steve's. And same stuff going on, lamps across the room, you know, and all this arguing and screaming. But she had insurance, and she was going to this counselor who kept telling her, you ought to go to Al-Anon. You really need to go to Al-Anon. And she used to tell me, you know, Louie, I went to Al-Anon. You got to go to Al-Anon. You got to quit fighting with him. This is not good. You got to quit fighting with him. And so I said, well, you know, so that Tuesday night, I got up and I went ahead and got dressed and I went over to my first Al-Anon meeting, which was over at DePaul Hospital. And I'll never forget that, February 1st, 1986. And I'll never forget that. I went in that meeting and I sat and I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried. And there were a lot of people, I bet every bit as many people in that meeting as there are today, it seemed like to me. And all those people had hope. They had that survival tool. I no longer knew what it was. And I had long since lost hope. And they all had that. And I remember the speaker. I never forget her. And I still, to this day, every time when I see her, I go up and thank her for talking that day. Her name is Faith, a real pretty girl with long dark hair. Since then, I've pointed her out to Steve when we've been in our Saturday night meetings, you know, the switchover ones. And, I'll never forget that meeting. And that meeting was the beginning of my new life for me. And I knew I had some place to go where people understood and knew what I was talking about, where I could come back and find out what was gonna, you know, how I could change my life. But, you know, it's a one day at a time thing. It is a one day at a time. And just to have a little ray of hope in one day, you know, that's all I needed was to get me up out of bed. And I had that little, just for today, I had that little thing, and I lived and breathed by that, our little just for today that we have. I carry that with me all the time. And for me, you know, that just for today told me that if I did something, I could do something for 12 hours that would appall me if I knew I had to do that for the rest of my life. And just for today, I was going to try to look nice and presentable. And that means, oh my gosh, put that makeup on. You got to be kidding me. You know, I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it. I just want to roll up, crawl up and die. And, also in there in that just for today, it said to start doing something nice for somebody and not get found out about it. And that was neat because through that I was able to learn humility, but even more importantly, it was starting to take that little focus off me, which is what I needed. I needed to get rid of that focus on me because I had to figure out how to get out of this and to start living my life again. And as we talked Thursday night about angels in our lives, and Steve that Thursday night mentioned about Dale. And Dale was a really good friend of ours who used to come to band jobs. And Dale had hair down to here, true 100% hippie. And this guy was so neat. I love this guy, you know. But I think even before he came and took Steve to his first meeting, I knew he was hope. You know, I just saw a halo around this guy. I instantly canonized him, right? And I knew he was going to save the day. And he would come over on the Sunday mornings, the football watching. And Steve had said, you know, he'd say that somebody was drinking somewhere at noon and that if drinking his beer meant he was an alcoholic, he was an alcoholic. I said, you got to be kidding me. You know, and I'm thinking, how can he say that? You know? And this Dale's just sitting there and I'm making Kool-Aid and we're drinking our Kool-Aid and stuff. And I used to, when I see Dale's truck out there, he had snakes. You know how you love and hate somebody? He had snakes, and he'd carry this big old python, whatever this thing was. It was big, gross, and ugly, and could eat you up. And he'd carry this thing and drive around, come walking into, hey, man, how's it going? Hey, really cool, dude. You know, he was so cool. I love this. I still love him. And I got to see him just in February, and I just love this guy. And you know, totally. The two of them were just real different people. But, you know, I just knew that this guy was going to be the salvation of my husband, right? And sure enough, you know, I went ahead and that next weekend after my first Al-Anon meeting, my sister and my little nephew, you know how the kids come in, my little nephew and his little buddies and another girlfriend of mine came over, and we got all the stuff out of that apartment while Steve had gone to work. And then, because he told me he had come home, and I left him just with his little survival tools too. I left him with his TV, his mattress, and was that it, honey? I think that was maybe one or two pots and pans. That was it. That was it. And but I only took what was mine, you know. we can agree to disagree now. Al-Anon has taught me that, and it's okay. It's okay. We agree to disagree. So as time progressed, and you know, we kept going to these meetings, and you know, I learned in Al-Anon not to make any quick decisions, and that to not make a decision is a decision. That's one of the greatest things in Al-Anon I've ever learned, along with not having all the answers. I don't have to have all those answers today. And I really like that. That comes in handy in my job, too. It helps me to instigate other people to do what they need to do and me not do it. See, I had one of those little brain fizzles, guys. I had a brownout. Anyway, we did end up getting married, and we waited 9 months. We did a compromise. We did a halfway between Al-Anon 6 months and a quarter of the, you know, three-fourths of the way between AA 1 year before you make these major decisions, you know, because Steve was doing his 90 days, 90 meetings in 90 days, and I just kept going back to my meetings, and I couldn't get enough of it, and I'd go to those open AA meetings, and I would go and listen, and I just thought, the people's hope that they had in their lives and the miracles and the smiles and the laughter and the fellowship that you get from the meetings, you know, was the way to do it. So we went ahead and we got married, and we bought a little house over in Cunningham with a little white picket fence. And since then, it's gotten a little bit bigger since then. But there was 5 years later that we had a little separation again. And because I had kept going to meetings, and things kind of drifted off, and you know how stuff starts happening in your life, and priorities happen, and both of us weren't going to meetings, so we broke up again. That violence was starting to happen again, only this time I knew it, and I could see it, and I could feel it, and I was really running scared, and so I moved out, and went to a year's worth of counseling. Now he's calling me all the time, right? He's calling me again, And so he went to the counseling, start going back to meetings, and since then it's been one day at a time, and we're working together. You know, in Al-Anon, I learned all my new tools, my new survival tools, and that's what I'd like to talk about is the recovery part of this program. And, you know, we have that serenity prayer that we have, that, you know, what can I change about this? What can I change? You know, what can I do? And is there anything that I can do? And the courage to change it, and they say that courage is faith that has said its prayers, and I really believe that, especially with my issues of fear that I have, and that I no longer have anymore because of Al-Anon, and try to work through, and then the wisdom to know the difference, you know, to those prayers again, once again, those prayers, to find out which way I'm supposed to go, and to hear my answers from all of you when I come to meetings. I have my sponsor. And my sponsor is my verbal, tangible touch with my higher power. And, you know, they have that acronym G-O-D, which is good orderly direction. And I always affiliate that with my sponsor. And why I chose my sponsor was because of her spirituality. I wanted that spirituality desperately. I knew she had that, and that's why I wanted. And then, let's see, we have the steps. Seeing those steps for me are my building blocks. Those are what got me back. And those are what taught me how to have my self-esteem again and taught me how to live in this world and live amongst this disease of alcoholism, because I have all those isms of that disease. I have all those symptoms. But, you know, and you have your step one, and we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives have become unmanageable. And I didn't have any problem with that because I knew how unmanageable my life had become. And I didn't know what I was going to do with this whole mess. I knew I was powerless. But, you know, not to feel so empty and dead and like having everything pulled out from underneath you, which you already feel like anyway. You know, they teach you about those three C's. You know, you didn't cause it. You know, you can't control it and you can't cure it. And I never sat there going like this to the guy, you know, or to anybody. Or they say that I've heard it said alcoholics affect 27 people. One alcoholic affects 27 people or something like that. I've heard that said. Well, see, I was telling Dennis last night that I've affected 27 alcoholics. I know I have. I know I have. I was really good at manipulating. And like I say, you know, I had my nighttime job in those bars, and I usually got my way. But anyway, I was powerless over this disease, and my life was truly unmanageable. And then we had that step two, and we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I already knew that power was up there and loved my God and my understanding, which I had to deal with in step three because I had to get to know a new one. But in step two, that insanity thing, I had a real problem with that. And why that is because I had remembered all my life my grandma lived in Farmington, Missouri. These are my father's parents. And she lived in Farmington, and she lived in an institution. And she was institutionalized at a very young age. And we used to go down and go see her, and I used to get car sick, so I couldn't go see her. Well, they tried to take me, but I'd always get car sick, and they'd have to leave me home. But I remember my mom talking about my grandma, and I remember Pop always having so much pain about my grandma. And see, what had happened was, in the stories as I hear it, and I... You know, you kind of wouldn't believe these things, but you could feel the pain from my father. And he would say, yeah, you know, the old man brought home a lady to live here. Her name was Sadie, and she had like four kids, and she just moved in. And so Mom ran around, and Winnie was her name. Winnie ran around and chased him with a butcher knife and tried to do everything she could do to kill him. And so he called the police and had her institutionalized. Because you see, she was just supposed to accept this new woman and these new kids. And of course, my father and the other six brothers and sisters, they all moved out. And they moved with other aunts and uncles and or lived on their own. And that's kind of the way it was. And about 7 years ago, my father passed away 5 years ago. And about 7 years ago, I remember him reading in the newspaper, and he said... He used to read those obituaries, and he said, and now I think I kind of know why, and I think because he was always looking for this, and he said, excuse me, but I have to quote his words, he said, the SOB is finally dead. The SOB is finally dead. You know, this is a disease of the families, and it does run rampant in the families, and, you know, Pop picked up some of his traits, and... But as I was lucky to know my father as he was older, I was the last of six kids, and we had two sets of families. And Pop, Mom always talked about Pop hugging the porcelain bowl, and she'd hope he'd just die when he'd be hugging that porcelain bowl. And my mom's a real character. He'd come home on those Saturday nights after those card games, and she'd go running out one door, he'd come running the other door, and the fighting going around and around and around in circles. And then finally, when we were born, I think it was 5 or 6 years later, he'd get so violently ill, he couldn't drink anymore. So he had to quit drinking, and only occasionally would he have a drink. But, you know, he never had the serenity that this program can bring. He never had that, and he used to have his rages and his tantrums and his, you know, pulling off that belt, and that's when it was serious, and I was Linda Marie, was when he'd be getting that belt out, you know, and, you know, it's just sad to know that he didn't have that, but as he got older, I think age brings along a serenity with itself, but not that true, deep spirit that you can have through the gifts of these programs, and, you know, I had heard that you look for a miracle in every day. And I heard that at a fall classic 1 year. That's one of my favorite roundups because that's the first one we had gone to. It was a fall classic. And a lady from out on said, look for a miracle in every day. And when Pop was dying, he had three months in the hospital. He went in for open heart surgery and never came out. And I remember those 3 months. And, you know, you're going to see him because you don't know when he's going to die. But you just, and you're having that hope, and you're hoping he's going to live, but you just don't know when he's going to die. And I had had time to make my amends with my father, and I knew I was so lucky to have this program so that I could grow and love this man. And he, you know, after he died, I found out that he always carried a picture of me in his wallet of when I was 12 years old. And my twin brother said to me, "You're the only picture in here." And it's just kind of one of those things that I was lucky enough to go up and give him kisses. He didn't want a kiss. I'd go up and give him a kiss and a hug, and I'd say, "Pop, how you doing? It's good to see you, Pop." You know, and "Yeah, Lou, how you doing?" Turn that head. And but that was okay. You know, I got to love the father that I wanted to love. And I knew he loved me. He just had a hard time showing it, but I knew he loved me. Anyway, but that looking for a miracle in every day, just going around those corners and stuff, I needed that exactly when I needed to hear it. And that's what got me, you know, pushing my mom in a wheelchair and going seeing Pop and going in and out of that room. I just kept looking for a miracle every day. And my miracle was to go through that hospital and go see him every day that he was still alive. Anyway, and then I have a sister, Mary, who's no longer with us now, and once again, the insanity of the disease, and she had five kids, and she was 16 years older than me, and I used to go babysit for her and all that neat stuff, and I remember her husband over there always drinking, and the hollering, and the arguing, and the fighting going on, and I guess when she was about 35 years old, she came down with schizophrenia, okay? She came down with schizophrenia. She started having these mental breakdowns and these problems, and once again being institutionalized. And I used to go down on Arsenal Street. I was the one that would go see her and take my mom and my twin. The three of us would go see her. The rest of the family, I guess, just had problems with it. You know, they just couldn't handle it. But through the grace of God, I would go see her, and I loved her. But I loved who she was, So through the years, she lived an awful life, a terrible life, and I would go, we'd go bail her out, move her around, and then finally, as God has these wonderful things happen in your life, I landed a job 16 years ago as I'm a project manager in Section 8 housing for elderly and disabled, and I was able to get her into Section 8 housing the last 6 years of her life, and she lived a beautiful life. She lived a very beautiful life. But see, so I had a real problem with this insanity thing. So once I understood what it was and kept coming back to these meetings and knew that it was okay and safe to say the word insane and to apply it to myself, and that I was going to be okay and not taken off to where she was, you know, through the grace of God. But there go I. But for the grace of God, guys. And then step three, I got to get to know my higher power all over again through my sponsor. And that's why I sought that sponsor out, because of her spirituality, you know, and I became willing, and it was time to surrender, to turn my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And I was ready to do that too. Now, there's some pulling and tugging going on, but it finally happened for me. And then that inventory, that step four. That searching and fearless moral inventory, that was one of the best things I could have done in my life, and I knew that that was going to be how I could change my life, was to do that good inventory and to work it with my sponsor. Good, I say good. I felt it was good because I was able to let go of all these things and along with it pull in the good things. You know, they say in Al-Anon to remember to take those good things along with you and replace those bad things with those good things. Because the self-esteem isn't running too good anyway. You got to have something to pull in there and do over again. And then, you know, admit to God, try ourselves another human being. Let it all out and let somebody else know about it. And then, you know, we have step six with getting rid of these character defects and letting go and not putting on those old shoes anymore, as they say. You know, getting rid of all that junk and that garbage. And then step seven, humbly. Asked them to move our shortcomings. You know, when the kids ask me, they'll ask, you know, the Alateens, and I say kids, I'm always talking about the Alateens, and they'll say, you know, what's the difference between a character defect and a shortcoming? And I go, oh, dear God, please help, you know, because I don't have all the answers, and I'm just hoping that something hits me real, not profound even, but something I can understand and something hopefully they'll understand. And I say, well, guys, you know how it is when you burp at the table? You burp at the table, and people just can't stand that. you know, but it feels good and you do it and you kind of start, and you kind of start learning that you shouldn't be doing this. So, you know, that's kind of a shortcoming. You kind of stop doing it because it's not nice, you know, and you do, that's kind of what you do. I said, and a character defect is when you know it just aggravates the heck out of somebody for you to sit there and burp at that table and you just keep burping and burping and burping every day of your life. I said, and it feels good. And I said, that's those character defects. That's kind of the way it is. I don't know. And you know, and then you got step eight, and you make that list of all those people that you harmed, and my sponsor told me, you know, put yourself on there, forgive yourself, get rid of that guilt and that shame. You know, you got to do that. You got to forgive yourself so that you can be good for others and have your higher power be instrumental in your life. And so I said, yes, I will. And on these two steps, I like to tell the story of Steve's mom. And why I'm doing that is because I had such an awful resentment against this little lady for having him through these years. I did. I just, you know, I am so serious about this. I guess you can relate to that, huh? You know, I just hated it. And we used to go over and see her, and she'd talk about how great he was. Oh, Stephen this and Stephen that, and isn't he a gentleman? I'm going, yeah, right, if you only knew. And I'm not going to tell her, right? I don't even want to crush her little bubble. But let me tell you, I had the hardest time with this lady with liking her. I really did. You know, on one hand, if she hadn't had him, I would have just loved this little gal and just thought she was so sweet. But boy, does she have some good things to say about him. And so I did. And I said, you know, I got to get over this. And my resentment was I could nit and pick everything that was the matter with that woman. I knew exactly what was the matter with that woman. And I'd get around her and my stomach would start stirring. I really have to be on my P's and Q's not to say something nasty and mean, you know. And so she was at the top of my resentment list, boy. And I remember my sponsor laughing and laughing. And I said, I know, it's really bad. It's really bad. But so through the course of time, you know, I knew to make this direct amends, I couldn't go up to this woman and say, you know, I just hated you for having him and wanted you to die. Why couldn't you have died and made my life better? But isn't that sick? Anyway, so it's terrible. So through these years, I have come to know this lady and love her. And sometimes I will say to my very special friend on a holiday, I'll send her a card to my very special friend, you know. And I always never forget to send her a card. And I put his name on there, too. And but that's because I'm making my amends to her. And that's how she would like life to be, right? You know, so it's okay for me to be nice and sweet to this lady and kind. And that's what I really try hard to do. And she talks a lot about the things that are the matter with her. And so the rest of her family has a hard time listening to her. So I always listen to her. I always listen. And that's because, you know, that's her life and that's where she is. That's who she is. And I know I'm not going to change her, right? There's no way I'm going to change her. So I try to work with acceptance. Awareness, acceptance, and action, right? Those three A's. So anyway, and I do love her today. She's really sweet. And I'm always saying to him, you better call your mom. Better call your mom. And then we have step 10, and that's one of my favorites. That's my daily maintenance. That's my high yield. I need that big time, that step 10. You know, continue to take my personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. And we'll have our little tiffs and stuff, and I don't know if he notices that, or I do with people at work and stuff, and I'll go in and I'll say, I am so sorry if you know, I didn't need to handle it that way. I could have been a little more kind and patient, you know? There's all kinds of things going on with that step 10 that just make my life so much better and keep me happy, joyous, and free. And then step 11, that's a long one, isn't it, guys? Saw through that prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Praying for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. I think I'm tired. yeah, but all those other steps got us there. All those other steps. And I love my daily contact with my higher power. And I am one of those that, you know, I'm sitting in the car and I'm doing my meditating and doing my third step prayer that I had a chance to memorize. Because A lot of times I don't have time for that in the morning, so I had to memorize those prayers so that I could get my meditations in and say them seriously, you know, say them in a good way. And then praying for the knowledge of His will. And then having had that spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And that is why I am here today. That is why I'm here, to carry this message and to try to practice these principles in all my affairs. And see, the gift of you asking me to talk is helping me to do these things. And it's what got me here. And I remember they said, you know, in one of our concepts, it says that participation is the key to harmony. And, you know, I used to sit in those meetings and my stomach would churn. I didn't want to say anything, and I thought I didn't have anything to offer, and I definitely didn't know what I was talking about. You know, I just really, really had a hard time with that. But, you know, through coming to these meetings, my sponsor said, you got to talk. And now, huh, guys? But she said, you got to talk. And I'd sit there and wait till the very last minute, you know, and hope the clock was wrong and hope I didn't have to talk. And then I'd talk and I just, you know, but I kept coming back and kept coming back. And you guys are the ones that taught me how to do this. And watching and from your experience, strength and hope, and learning how you did it, and listening to how things work for you, and seeing the miracles and hearing the miracles in your lives. You know, one of the first meetings, I heard this lady say she's an extremely grateful member of Al-Anon. And I'll never forget this woman, Penny, and she had a lot of children. And I thought, how do these women do it with all these kids? How do they do it, you know? I just don't know how they do it. But she said that, and I will never forget that she said that. And now I know what she's talking about when she says she's an extremely grateful member of Al-Anon. And she had talked about our closing prayer, and in our closing prayer and how we say, you know, give us this day our daily bread, which is what this program is, and forgive us our trespasses, which is our step 8, as we forgive those who trespass against us, which is our step 9. You know, I mean, there's just so many neat things that are just out there. And that wonderful man with 45 years telling me that neat poem this morning, that's what I needed to hear to help me with the serenity to get up here. I don't know. Am I rambling? I don't know if I am, but I think, I know I'm sure there's some more stuff that I want to say and talk about. And, you know, the kids. I'll just touch on them real quick. You know, I always wanted kids, and when I was growing up, my other sister, who is a saint, has 8 children, and she's in the program too, which is really neat. Isn't that neat? I'm so lucky. I have 2 sisters in the program, and really lucky. But so we have good family reunions now, guys. We have real good family reunions, and I look forward to them. But Steve may not, but I do. Gets tired of my family. But the Alateens, as I say, I do the Alateens, and I've had the gift of doing them for 12 years. And guys, I can't say enough about our Al-Anon program, our AA program, and the Alateen program. And the kids have taught me detachment. You know, in our book it says detachment is stepping over the alcoholic and going to bed, right? And then detachment with love, though, is stepping over the alcoholic, but covering up first, and then going to bed. And Sheila, you talked about it the other night. You know, detachment's different with a lot of people, and with children, and with loved ones, and or with spouses. And so I have to detach with these kids. These are the kids in my life. For some reason, we didn't have kids, but I do have kids. I have these kids, and when I surrendered to that idea and that this is how it works for me. You know, God's got to have these little people out here running around doing this stuff. And I love those kids. They taught me unconditional love. They taught me patience. They taught me tolerance. They taught me understanding. And do they know what the word detachment is? See, they can't get out and go in a car and go drive around and get away from that screaming and hollering and arguing. They can't go do that. They don't know how to do that. And they're still struggling learning in school, much less learning this program, you know. So they have taught me how to do this. I can't say enough about them. We go camping. We do roundups. We do like this roundup here. And you talk about the unconditional love and the spirit. That's what I feel here, and that's what I feel at those roundups. Our unconditional love is an exercise to just hug each other just because of being you, because everybody's a miracle. God does not create junk. He does not make junk. Let's see. Took the kids on the radio to talk. And we do this, you know, anonymity and group autonomy. Anonymity and group autonomy. And that's the all those visual aids, you know, that you, well, and the kids, they get into the music and stuff. And it is just so neat to hear them talk their program. You know, and they'll be coming back, and that's my service work for me is the kids, you know. I've thought about GR, and I go down to our AWSCs. I go to our meetings. I take our little group representative from our Alting group down there, you know, and I sit back, don't vote, you know, behave myself, stay out of that stuff. And because we know what that's like, right, gals? And takes a long time to make a decision. And but that's good. That's good. We give it a lot of thought, and our traditions teach us that. That's what's good about our traditions. But anyway, it's just been the greatest experience of my life. I can't live any other way but in the program of Al-Anon. And that's the way that I choose to live my life now. I love this life. I love every person that's in this program. I love my hugs. Gotta have my hugs, boy. I carry them with me throughout the week and going home, and you know, on the ride home, I have my hugs, and I'll be nice and sweet to my husband. You know, I'll be really nice. But I just want to read, if I can, just one more. Maybe I don't have. Oh, here it is. It's my other little Bible. Put my glasses on straight. You know, I heard they came out with contacts for one far away and one close up. Did you hear that? I don't know. Damn. God, there is help. I got this vanity thing that I got to do a step four on, guys. So anyway, there's a really neat page in here. I miss Joanne Milton. I miss her. Let's see. Is this a page? No, guys. Please bear with me. It's on. It's back here on. Is it Pop's birthday? Wait a minute. Hold on. You know how you get those special. The special days, and it talks about, oh, I found this late at night. But if I'm not supposed to find it, I'm not supposed to find it. But it talks about our tradition five, is what it talks about. That's a higher power one. Reason is that a blank statement. Nope. First step. Nope. Nope. Yes. Ah. You know what? I guess I'm going to have to close with a joke. No, I'm only kidding. January 23rd, learning the Al-Anon program and all its deep meanings and applying it to my daily life is not a simple matter of going to a meeting now and then. Suppose I had decided to learn another language or study art or science. I would have to work at it every day and practice these things I learned until they became part of me. A philosopher or an artist studies every day for years to perfect himself. How can I hope to be perfect myself in the Al-Anon way of life without daily application? Right now, I am reading something that will help me to grasp the Al-Anon philosophy. Right now, I will set myself a program of reading the Al-Anon literature, which will help me to understand my problem and improve my outlook on life. Then I will be ready to solve my difficulties as they arise. Then I will know when to stand aside and let them work themselves out. And I like to end and close with saying thank you and with the Al-Anon Declaration. And let it begin with me. And whenever anyone, anywhere, reaches out for the hand of Al-Anon or Al-Anon, may it always be there and may it begin with me. Thank you guys for listening to me. Thank you very much.